It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Your host, Charlie Potter, here on WGN Radio. Thank you for joining me this morning, and hopefully you enjoy the show. I'm going to start off with something that is not very near to Chicago, but where I had the pleasure of being earlier this week as I tried my best to escape what has actually been a very brief winter so far, but winter nonetheless, and I'm not an individual who wants to run to the coast of Florida to go sit on a beach. So instead, every year, for many, I have headed south to the marshes of Louisiana along the Gulf Coast, and that's what I want to talk a little bit about this morning. Not so much about the duck hunting, that's not the purpose, but to talk about the ecology of the Gulf Coast marshes and also what's going on with the really massive flooding in the Midwest, and then talk a little bit about, in the next few minutes, about what it's like to spend a morning in one of the great birding places on Earth, and that's the coast of Louisiana marshes. But as you're all aware, or many of you are, the flooding, which has devastated portions of the Midwest, upper Midwest, and now moving to the South, I've talked on the show several times about its impact on wildlife. It has a great benefit to migratory birds, particularly waterfowl, who now have literally millions of acres of habitat available to them that ordinarily would be dry, either in soybean fields or corn fields or cotton fields or dry woodlands. Now, the entire Mississippi alluvial plain basically is awash in water. Levees are being broken, and from really central Illinois all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, the Big Muddy, as the Mississippi is called, and the Ohio and the Missouri and the White and the Cache, all these in the Atchafalaya, all these rivers are just raging. And when they rage like this at this time of the year, which doesn't happen all that often, it provides just an incredible bounty of habitat for migratory waterfowl. So the damage to personal property is obviously real. The damage to agricultural property, not so much because we're not in the growing season. The only place where there's going to be substantial damage is where levees broke and sedimentation, mostly sand, has washed in or caused blowouts, but there's really not, it's not a time when we're growing, so there's not much of an agricultural issue. So the benefit is to waterfowl. So heading to South Louisiana, as I did this week, I expected, which is always the case, much warmer climates than Chicago, although by Louisiana standards, it was cold. It was actually 34 degrees on Monday morning as we set out from south of Lafayette in a little boat. And what I really want to do is take you on a little bit of a journey, I guess, of what it's like pre-dawn to be in the dark of massive marshes, in this case 76,000 acres of contiguous marshland. That is a size which, well, Medewin, it's over 10 times the size of the Medewin Callgrass Prairie, and that's just this one marsh I was in. And we set off at the ungodly hour of 4:30 in the morning, and I actually asked my host, are we in a different planet, or does the sun come up unusually early here? For sunrise, shooting time and sunrise wasn't until 6:30, and we left the landing a little bit after 4:30, in boats that are built for Louisiana. They're narrow and they're long to go down the canals, and they're shallow draft, and 34 degrees in the Gulf Coast marshes is the equivalent of about zero in Chicago. The humidity just grips you, and with a full slate of stars overhead, not a cloud could be seen. Of course, there's actually no moon either, so we really had the full darkness, the full array of stars were overhead, and not even a light. I don't care how far you looked in any direction, not an oil rig, not a refinery, not a single light. As we headed out in the darkness under the roar of these 250 horsepower Mercury motors, inboard, outboards, and we went for nearly 45 minutes winding and turning our way through canals and turns and twists. And in the bright light of day, I would have no idea how one could find their way, but in the dark, it was even more unbelievable as we raced along at 20 miles an hour. Eventually, and think about spending 45 minutes in an open boat, by the way, when it's 34 degrees and you're going 20 miles an hour, it's bloody cold. Eventually, we arrived at our point of transfer from where we left a big boat to get into what in South Louisiana they call pirus, which are basically, the best way to describe them is they're floating pieces of wood that you try to stand in and not fall out of. They're long. They're about 10 to 12 feet long. They're about shoulder width wide. They have little gunwales, maybe 6 to 8 inches, and they were designed, 200 years ago or more by individuals who settled in South Louisiana. They were designed to be able to pole your way through the marshes standing up. And if you've never done this, I don't advise doing it in the dark of night or in the middle of winter. Better off to try it in a swimming pool in the summer. These things are as tippy as an apple, and you stand in them with a push pole in hand, and in the darkness with a headlight on your head, you start to pole down little channels that seem to be nothing more than just openings in the reeds. So I followed my host in front of me. He had not only was he standing in his boat, but he had a very active black Labrador retriever that was moving from side to side to side to side. I have no idea how he stayed in the boat. All I had to do was stand up and lean on the pole as I pushed my way through the marsh. And we moved for another half an hour or so, ever deeper with the cattails and the rows of cane higher than our heads. And every so often we would flush a egret or a heron. In the distance, we could hear lots of pintail chirping, and it became like a symphony. We, half an hour later, we were now we're almost quarter of six, 45 minutes before the appointed time at which dawn actually came in the marsh, 45 minutes before daylight, was actually alive. You could hear nutrias squealing and screaming off in the distance. We could hear egrets, we could hear mallards, we could hear pintail, snow geese, white front geese. It was just a symphony of sound, frogs croaking, as we paddled or pulled our way silently through the marsh in the dark of night to finally arrive at a little hole which would be about the size, not much bigger than twice the size of most of our living rooms, a little hole in the marsh that had been burned in September when the marsh was low to create the opening, and then the winter rains that have come have filled it up, and it was an opening that was stuffed with decoys, and upon our arrival, the water exploded, even in the dark, with mallards and pintail and widgeon and gadwall and teal and a few geese and a couple of egrets leaving. And as the gathering light began to grow in a sky that didn't have any obstruction, no trees as far as you could see, and not a cloud anywhere as the dawn turned pink, the noises that we had heard in the dark became silhouettes in the air, as ibis moved from roost to feeding areas, and pintail moved off their roost to fly out to the rice fields. And then they were meeting on their way back from the rice field. They were meeting mallards and pintail coming in that had gone out in the dark of night to feed. And it's one of those things, as you stand in a marsh, it doesn't matter whether you plan to shoot anything or not. It's just you are miles, and I mean miles, from any point of civilization in one of the most remote areas in North America, an area that has been so devastated by oil and gas exploration and, of course, the subsidence of the Gulf of Mexico, which we all read about. In this part of the world where I was, it's all very real. The marsh we were in, while to me it seemed enormous, is less than half the size it was just 20 years ago. And as we stood there in the dark, just looking as the day began to dawn, neither one of us really had any inclination to get out of our pirus. Of course, these waters are full of alligators, but this time of the year, they tell me they're dormant. I didn't know if I wanted to take their word for it or not, but there was a little makeshift blind, and eventually we got out of our pirus and plodded over to the blind, which had a couple boards on its floor, and sat down. Neither one of us were anxious to load our guns. We were much more enthralled with the awakening of a marsh in a place where waterfowl concentrations are among the largest on Earth, and where shorebirds live year-round, and we had all kinds of birds that we would never see in the Midwest. We had model ducks, and we had ibis, and egrets, and herons. And we just sat there and watched the day begin. And as we did, it struck me that here I am, over 1,000 miles from Chicago, in a world entirely apart, in a culture entirely different, where they live off the land. For the 3 days I was there, I never ate a single thing that came from a store, not one item. We had crab. We had red snapper. We had etouffee. We had vegetables that came out of the gardens. We had eggs that came from the chickens right next door. And we had more fish, and we had crawfish. We had shrimp. I guess it would have been a cholesterol feast as I sat there and looked at the shrimp and the butter and the crawfish and the whole experience of being in South Louisiana. And as I was winding my trip down, and I'm winding down because we're going to go to a break, I realized, gosh, for the past 30-plus years, I have had the incredible privilege of almost every January escaping Chicago for a part of the world now that's become to me like a winter, like a second winter home. Only it's a marsh. It's a camp deep in the marsh. There's no television. There's a telephone. It's got to be one of the last party lines left in America. And it's a culture where the individuals there, they're not interested in coming to Chicago and going to the top of the Willis Tower, or they're not interested in going to New York. This is their life. They live off the land 365 days a year, and they're very isolated from the rest of the world. And I thought, in many ways, what a blessing. They don't have traffic. They live in boats. Seldom do they get in cars. They don't go to grocery stores very often. Yeah, they get milk and things like that, but by and large, these individuals, Cajuns as they're called, live off the land, and they live very well. And as the day warmed up, I shed my coat, and it rose into the 60s, I thought, this isn't bad at all. What a great way to escape winter, and the fact that we were able to shoot a few ducks on the way was really just icing on the cake. But even if you never took a gun and just went for a few days and spent some time in the Louisiana marsh, you would get an incredible appreciation for a culture, a heritage, and a way of life that is so diverse from anything we know, and yet so rich and wonderful. So with that, I'm now back in Chicago, and I'll be back at the Great Outdoors Show in just a moment. And when I come back, I want to talk a little bit about the upcoming primary in Iowa and some of the issues on the table that affect all of us who like the outdoors. Thank you so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Winter is here, and it's always tough on the road. But when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And nothing is tougher than the 2016 Chevy Silverado. Silverado is the longest-lasting, most dependable pickup on the road. With all-steel construction, Silverado is built to tame Chicago's winter weather. And Silverado's towing package offers 11,400 pounds of towing capacity. Perfect for hauling your snowmobiles. I love pulling my neighbors out of their snowdrifts. And right now, you can get $7,250 total savings on a 2016 Chevy Silverado All-Star. $7,250. That really warms my heart. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and get all the details. Or head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today and pick up a pickup that works as hard as you do, on the road or off. Chevy Silverado is one tough customer.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and hope you enjoyed that little tale about being in the land of the Cajuns and shrimp and crawfish and etouffee. Moving from that to Iowa, 3 weeks from now, no, not even that, 2 weeks from now, they'll have a primary, a caucus rather, in Iowa, and we're off and running to see who the presidential nominees from each respective party will be in November. We've certainly heard plenty about that. What we've heard absolutely nothing about, and Iowa is a state that is deep, has deep roots in the outdoors. Ding Darling's from Iowa, Max McGraw's from Iowa. Many of the conservation movements began in Iowa, Isaac Walton League, etc. There is no discussion as to what is going on with the natural resources of America, much less Iowa. And Iowa has a huge income that comes from hunting, particularly pheasant hunting, and also from deer hunting. And it has seen its income plummet in the last half dozen years from recreation, due to the fact that so many acres of the Conservation Reserve Program have been lost. Literally tens of millions of dollars have been stripped out of the rural Iowa economy as a result of hunting opportunity. Used to be lots of individuals from Chicago. Many of you listening would jump in your car, come October, November, drive out to Iowa, go pheasant hunting for the weekend, quail hunting, come back. Those fields that you hunted in were Conservation Reserve Program fields or watersheds. They have been plowed up and turned into more black dirt as Iowa chased what they thought was a ever-rising income from growing corn. Well, we've seen in the last 6 months particularly, but the last year and a half, that corn has gone from $8 a bushel to $3.50 a bushel. There's not much money to be made in corn, but the damage in the near term is done. Land that secured water from running off into streams, it helped reduce the nitrogen loads on our streams and in our waterways and the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico, of course, now is turned black to grow corn that is not making anyone any money. And I think about the politicians in Iowa, and they pander for votes. How many of them, to date, by the way, the answer is about zero. Mike Huckabee may be the only exception. How many of them have gone into the cafes and said, you know, when I'm president, I'm going to make sure that we have a sustainable rural economy based on agriculture, but that offers us the opportunity for individuals not only who live in Iowa, but to come to Iowa and partake in America's great outdoors and our traditions of hunting and fishing, particularly in Iowa, that's deer hunting and pheasant hunting. To the rural economy, to the little cafe, to the little grocery store, to the motel, that's how they make their money. They don't make their money on big ag. Big ag doesn't come to stay in the motels in October and November and fill them every night and go to the cafes. Those are the kinds of hotels and, those are the kinds of businesses that depend on hunting. And Iowa has been one of the absolute core states in America when hunting is a big impact on the rural economy, and yet we can't seem to find anyone who's even talking about it. And I don't care whether it's Donald Trump or Jeb Bush or Ted Cruz or Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. It doesn't matter. They're coming into Iowa and talking about their view of America for the future. And not one of them talks about the values of hunting and fishing, outdoor recreation, and family and heritage and economics that come from hunting and fishing. It's a multi-billion dollar industry that this crop of presidential candidates at this point in time isn't even paying lip service to. So hopefully that'll change in the coming weeks. Iowans care a lot about it. We care a lot about it. You wouldn't be listening to the Great Outdoors Show. It's time that we have a national discussion on how we're going to help our rural economies instead of just a discussion about politics. And rural economies are helped when people can go hunting and fishing. So thanks for listening. I'll be back next Sunday with more on the Great Outdoors Show. Have a great week in the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter, your host on WGN Radio 720.